So America's role in the world is a recurrent theme, both in the Republican primaries now done, and in the sort of critique of the incumbent administration. There's this sort of meme out there in Republican circles that he doesn't have a grand vision of America's place in the international order. How do you see the issue playing in the campaign? How is it shaping up in the campaign?
I think it's going to play in the campaign in two ways. First of all, one of the things the Democratic Party is going to try very hard to do is to puncture the old meme that Republicans are good on national security and Democrats are weak on national security. And I think you're already seeing this in the amount that they're playing up the killing of Osama bin Laden and those kinds of issues. And that's part of a broader context of injecting foreign policy into the election in a way that it often is not. Often foreign policy isn't very significant in election campaigns. But in this year, I think it will be. On the broader question of America's role in the world, as you said, one of the critiques of the Republican Party of Obama has been that he's been essentially too soft on China. That's what underlies the rhetoric, too soft on China and not enough willing to use America's continuing power to contain the rise of China or to balance the rise of China. I think that argument got harder for the Republicans after Obama's Asia trip and the, quote, pivot to Asia, signaling very heavily that it's going to be willing to solidify America's naval presence in the South China Seas and the East China Seas, stationing troops in Darwin as a signal to China that it remains in the region. So that argument becomes a little bit harder, and I think there's been a genuine shift in the Obama administration from an effort to find new patterns of cooperation with China to recognizing that that's going to be more difficult than anticipated, and now balancing a cooperative approach with a, if not containment, then certainly a balancing approach.
And do you think, is it limited to China, or is, I mean, it seems to me there's a part of the meme is a larger critique of the administration's sort of supposed timidity about American power. There's sort of the critique of the kind of leading from behind rhetoric. There's the sort of sense that we should be, you know, more engaged in, particularly more militarily engaged in trouble spots around the world, even sometimes, as you sort of promised, to be less militarily engaged, right? But there's a sort of sense that there's not a vision of a kind of grand use of American power that seems broader than China.
I think that's right, and Iran looms heavily in that as well. A sense, certainly part of the Republican critique, that Obama's being too shy to signal a willingness to use decisive force in the case of Iran and put too much emphasis on the prospects for negotiations. Libya, the critique from leading from behind, as you know, I thought that episode was really shallow in truth, that the diplomacy around Libya was pretty sophisticated in terms of getting the regional organization to call for the intervention, in terms of getting the council to authorize the intervention, which was necessary for all of our allies, and then providing mission-critical technologies to the actual campaign itself. Unfortunate phrase, leading from behind, but a sophisticated operation. So you're right to say that this is part of a broader theme. I guess what I hold back on the critique is I wonder whether in practice the Republicans will have different policy options when they're in power, or if they're in power. It's one thing to critique from the outside. It's quite another to pursue those options.
Well, so let's tack back and let's talk about what we can really say at this stage about the Obama administration's view of America's role in the world. If you sort of strip away the campaign rhetoric, what's the Obama record in this space, and is it fundamentally one of discontinuity or fundamentally one of continuity with the last administration?
When you reference back to the last administration, one of the interesting things is that, of course, there were fundamental discontinuities within the last administration, and I think that you have to have this texture. My read of the two terms of George Bush is that in his first term, the president was convinced by an argument that the projection of American power in fairly raw and unfettered terms was the critical device of international order, and actually loosening the bound between American power and international norms and international institutions was an important part of the first term. And then a dramatic reversal in the second term. Getting much, much closer to the UN, getting closer to the IMF, and not taking nearly so firm a stance on the use of American power unfettered from international institutions. When the Obama administration comes into office, then in a way part of the campaign, part of Obama's campaign, is a critique of Bush's first term. But in government, I think, has been closer to Bush than people anticipated, both in terms of Bush Jr. having been closer to international norms in his second term, but also the Obama administration being more willing to use force in places like drone strikes in Pakistan and these kinds of issues than people had anticipated. In fact, the Obama administration has done a lot more in terms of drone strikes than Bush did. My concern there, quite frankly, is that part of that is driven by the politics of being wanting to be seen to be tough on national security, as opposed to from actual strategy. So I think there's a lot more continuity than discontinuity across administrations, and there's discontinuity within administrations. I don't think the first couple of years of Obama look similar to the last couple of years of Obama. I think they came into office believing that a lot could be accomplished through cooperative negotiations that didn't go very well in the first couple of years and have pivoted to a tougher stance.
So what are examples of that?
I think the two big examples are China and Iran. I think the kind of hand that was reached out to Iran in the Nawaz speech and the openness to negotiations early on ran aground, and basically with the revolution inside, or the attempted revolution inside Tehran, and recognition that they weren't going to be able to negotiate with Tehran. And the second with China, I think the early days of a willingness to open up to China on a whole range of fronts, and then discovering that the Chinese were more distrustful than we had anticipated, more recalcitrant than we had anticipated, and so shifting towards a firmer stance on China.
So you've told a story in which the Bush administration comes in with a very grandiose sense of America's unfettered powers, gets reined in by a reality that it causes it to tack back in a different direction. The Obama administration comes in with a sense of wanting to conduct a much more negotiated international diplomacy, and confronts a reality that's often, you're not going to be able to get anything done or get enough done that way, and becomes more unilateralist over time, ends up in somewhat the same place that the Bush administration was in toward the end of the Bush administration. Talk about the Romney and more general Republican critique of the Obama administration. Which does have this "you're not unilateralist enough" tone to it. How much of that reflects a sort of campaign style, and how much of it can we sort of reasonably expect to reflect a very different governance style?
I think the one of the things we have to bring into the fore in this discussion is that the Republican critique is not just of Obama's policy, it's also of the declinist meme. And the Obama administration has not used the declinist meme, but it's been out there at the same time as the Obama administration policy, right? So in the aftermath of the global financial crisis and the shift to the G20 and the realities of the economic consequences of the global financial crisis, the argument of America in relative decline and rise of new powers has been very much abroad in public commentary, and I think the Republican critique is as much against that meme as it is against Obama policy.
But there is a sense, a tendency to impute that on the part of the president's critics, to impute that meme to him. I think that's part of why leading from behind becomes such a catchphrase, right?
Right, and I think it's also goes to the fact that Obama comes in and he's so much more clearly aligned to a globalized world than most American foreign policy elites are used to. He's comes from a tradition in which Indonesia matters, not Europe. I mean, it's just a different worldview. His life story appears to project a different worldview. And certainly some of the ways he's talked during the campaign and the critique of Bush unilateralism, the critique of Bush policy on climate change and on nuclear proliferation issues, etc., did play into that sense that he's an apologist or that he doesn't understand America's exceptional role in the world and these kinds of things. And so I think that that's right. He was, but more in campaign mode, that critique I think was more resonant of his campaign rhetoric than of decisions when he was in office. And I suspect that we'll see that the Republicans will confront many of the same realities that the Obama administration confronted if they end up in office.
So is the difference between them largely at the end of the day one of tone and rhetoric, or is there a substantive core to it in which you can sort of reasonably expect that a Romney administration looks different in practice in a certain set of areas?
I could argue both sides.
Do them both in sequence. What if I say make the case that a Romney administration looks different?
Yeah. I think where you might see a Romney administration looking different is on two issues in particular. I think there might be a tendency to move more quickly to the option of force on Iran, although I don't know on that front. I mean, they may discover once in office that they think twice about that issue. And the second would be certainly on the rhetoric and maybe on some of the policy approaches to international institutions. And that's just a kind of red meat issue in the Republican Party and often doesn't really matter to key policy choices. And so it's a sort of easy bone to throw to the right wing of the party and to the Tea Party, where the kind of deep suspicions of international institutions still ride pretty high. So the argument against, the argument for difference would be a more rapid move to the decision of force in particular cases and a greater distrust of international institutions. The argument for continuity, look at James Baker's foreign policy, read Obama's national security strategy, read Romney's foreign policy speech, and read Mark Rubio's speech at Brookings, and you can't find any significant difference within them in terms of core themes of policy. I mean, they're absolutely constant in terms of the central principles of American foreign policy. And I think that reality is more dominant than the reality of the difference.
But that's a very interesting point, because I mean, it used to be that we say, you know, politics stops at the water's edge, and now we campaign on, you know, America's role in the world is actually a big theme in the campaign, and yet you're saying at some level it's an optical theme, not a real area of substantive difference between the parties.
Yeah, I think that on the major strands of policy, that's right. And my sense is these are shaped by fundamental realities that are not entirely in the realm of policy choice for the United States. I think the big two realities that shape American policy at this stage are our deeply increased dependence on global economics. We are much more integrated into the global economy than we have ever been before, and that is simply a reality that we can't escape. And that constrains our policy choices. And then the second reality is our continued dominance in global military terms and the pressures that puts on us, but also the constraints that places on us in terms of a need for caution and the implications. We have stakes in every region. We have allies in every region, and we have to calibrate our policy accordingly. So it's easy to aim for a very ambitious, hard power foreign policy. The realities are more constraining.
And conversely, it's easy to aim for a very negotiated multilateralist foreign policy, but then you do have these obligations to get certain things done that push in the other direction. So, you know, you're describing a presidency very shaped by forces and external realities, irrespective of ambition of the individual. I always close these podcasts by asking people, you know, what should the next president do, irrespective of who wins? And, the obvious answer to that, given what you've said, is, well, it won't really be up to him very much. But I'm going to ask it anyway. Sort of what's the takeaway? Is it that, you know, we really shouldn't be campaigning on these issues? Is it that there's a window in which the rhetorical attitude really matters? You know, what's the advice that and the guidance that this analysis gives to the next administration?
Well, I would make two broad points, one on the campaigning question and one on strategy. I do think it hurts the United States that even if policies are more constant than they are varying, the rhetoric is deeply varying and contested now, and there are spikes. The first two or three years of Bush Jr. was a spike towards unilateralism that was different than other things. And in a world in which we have to convince a lot more people than we used to have to convince to pursue given kinds of policies or try to corral a much wider cast of characters than just our European allies or others. A lack of certainty about where our policy is going to be or a lack of a sense of consistency is complicating. It causes people to move to self-help or to look to other alliances, and they don't have that many options, but they're looking for them. So a greater sense of consistency in American foreign policy, I think, would be an asset and an attempt to recover that and to demonstrate and to illustrate the continuity across administrations and across time would be positive for the United States. The more practical point that I would make is that for any president, the use of force remains a viable option. The unilateral use of force remains a viable option. It's always going to be there, at least in the foreseeable future. But most policy isn't shaped by force. Most of the things that we want to get done in the world are not shaped by our ability to use decisive military power. Most of them are shaped by our economic relations and our diplomatic relations and strategy. And there, I think we have to invest more time and more energy, not necessarily more resources, but better strategy and more energy, in forging new diplomatic coalitions. I think we are in a world now in which, compared to the past, to accomplish any given set of goals, it used to be that we could rely primarily on Western allies or like-minded countries. And we're now in a world where we have to convince India, Brazil, Turkey, others to go along on given policy choices. And we don't know very much about these countries. We haven't invested in language skills. We haven't invested in deepening the relationship. And we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to get to know Turkey and Brazil and India as well as we know Germany and the UK and France, and deepen our capacity to mobilize coalitions from all sorts of different kinds of countries and across different regions. And that's, I think, no matter who the president is, they'll discover that ability to organize very diverse coalitions is actually one of America's core strengths. I'm very bullish on American strength and American power in the coming period because I think we have vastly greater than anybody else the capacity to organize diverse coalitions in support of a range of policy choices. But that requires a different kind of diplomatic approach than we're used to, and we're going to have to adapt.
And is there any sign in your judgment that either or both of the presidential candidates have a deep appreciation of that?
I do think I would argue that Obama has a better appreciation of that, and it's hard to judge how much that's a function of his worldview and how much it's the function of his experience. I was struck in Romney's foreign policy speech that when he referenced U.S. allies and he referenced different partners in the world, all of them were the old Western partners. Asia didn't get a reference, for example, in his foreign policy speech. All the references were back to Europe. Now, whether in power, if he gets elected, he would quickly discover that he has to reach out to new actors. I suspect he will.
Thanks very much for coming in.
Pleasure.